Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow. LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, make it more possible.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 75. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
Hello.
Hello. We're 25 away from the big 100.
We need to come up with some sort of anecdote for countdowns or something. Like when I had 25 years of sucking. Oh, no.
Well, I want to say that when you have 29, almost 30 years, this is almost your birthday show.
It is.
I mean, this is where you're going to be 30 the next show that we
have.
You will have entered into your 30s. And how do you feel about it? What do you think when you look back on your 20s? What have they been about?
Learning.
Really?
Learning,
yeah.
Learning how to open my eyes. Learning how to not get upset about things. And learning how to take a compliment, because that's some hard shit for me.
Yeah.
That's really difficult.
Yeah.
I'm always like, no, I'm just. So yeah, learning. It was just learning. Because I knew how to have sex with boys before my 20s. So
there you go. You didn't have to learn that.
I didn't have to learn that.
You just had to learn all the other shit that goes around it.
Yeah, yeah, really. And I think learning who your friends are and who your friends are not. And I don't mean that as a diss to anybody.
Right.
But there's a certain kind of person, I think, that you can have as a friend in your life going forward, and you don't know what that is in the beginning.
Yeah.
You don't know that early on, and you learn that, and you learn what you need in your friends. And I mean, for that matter, in any relationships, you learn how to, you're like, oh, this is what I can have in my life, because honey, I know the things I can't have.
Yeah.
And that list just keeps getting bigger every day.
So now are you the least bit unnerved by being a gay man and entering your 30s?
No, I'm, you know what? And it's so funny that, well, I have to say something. I was about to start writing a column called 30 and Counting in Night Spots.
Yeah.
And I actually decided not to do it. And I'm actually not going to write for Night Spots anymore. So thank you to everybody who sent me so many nice emails. But where's your column? Thank you so much. But I've quit working for Night Spots. I'm just going to be doing the Queercast for Windy City now. But I started writing a column about sort of my experiences and going through it. And I'm thinking, you know what? I can't do this. I'm excited because I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a milestone. It's not a huge milestone.
It's a big milestone. The big 3-0. It's a milestone for people. Yeah, it's probably the years leading up to 30 are the biggest, like, I think where people start to crack.
Yeah, well, 28. 28 is the Saturn return. 28, 29 is when the crazy things happen. Yep. So, but I don't know. I think it's just now I'm so excited because I do feel like an adult. I feel like I have adult things. I feel like I'm doing adult things in my life. And I'm just excited. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I sound like fucking Pollyanna or something like that, but I feel like really positive about everything. And there's sort of only one little area in my life that I'm not as happy as I could be with, and I'm working on it. So it's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yay. So happy birthday to yourself.
Thank you.
Play one of your favorite songs at the end of the show.
I think I will.
Play one of your favorites out so we get a little touch of you.
You know, of course it'll be a big screaming black diva. So there we go.
A song of your 20s, possibly.
Yeah.
A song to send you into your 30s.
Yeah. But you know what? Theater came into my life right now. So that's such a big thing for me. And it's been such a pivotal journey. Just in the last couple months, it's really ramped up. And speaking of theater,
yes,
you find that now I've been like so wanting to talk about this show with you since I saw it, because I saw it so long ago. But I'm so excited that you got a chance to see Doubt.
I finally saw Doubt, and we're airing this show, and the show has left, and yes, that is sad. Although it's left Chicago, it is going to be in St. Louis. It's going to be in Tampa.
St. Louis is close.
Charlotte. It's going to be in Minneapolis. There's lots of places you can see it. So you can go to doubtthetour.com. Mm-hmm. And find out. I think that this play by John Patrick Shanley is truly absolutely beautifully written. The performance, Cherry Jones' performance, is truly just riveting to watch. And if you listen to our interview with her, you mm-hmm. obviously all know that I am couldn't absolutely be any more of a mentor from afar that I've never gotten to meet mm-hmm. until last week. And
fantastic.
Yeah, because of the interview, I was invited back to meet her after the show. And
I believe her words were, oh, you must come back.
Yes.
Oh, you must come back.
So I went back and met her, and my partner had known her in New York years ago when Kelly was very young. And so we went across the street to a bar, hung out with her for 2+ hours, talking to her about the play and the tour and her life. And she's obviously entirely in love with Sarah Paulson from Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. So mm-hmm. if you know who that is, So let's talk about the play first. Then I can talk about it. I can't get the smile off my face.
I
feel absolutely so... It feels so strange. Speaking of one's 20-some-year-old self, like my early 20 self was sitting across from her with her talking to me for 2 hours and was just literally giddy inside and couldn't believe it. And then there was this part of me that's where I am in my 30s and felt like I am totally on par to be having this conversation with a person who's obviously extraordinarily skilled at what she does, but is just a wonderful person and a Southerner and a lesbian.
High pod kettle calling.
Yeah. I mean, just somebody who's just very real. She's very real and very down to earth. So I was not nervous at all in talking to her. And I don't think that was my ego. It just felt like that was the moment in which I'm supposed to meet her is mm-hmm. when I'm arrived at this place in my life. But the play is about, obviously, the
Doubt.
It's about doubt. And I love the opening sermon, which is a monologue by the priest about why we doubt and how we doubt and as people and as individuals and the struggle that we have. And it just reverberated so loudly to me. Mm-hmm. I would imagine to many people, I am somebody who struggles with doubt and uncertainty. And yet there are things I'm very certain about. Yeah. So I can relate to the principal, Sister Aloysius, that Cherry Jones, where, you know, she is a woman of certainty and he is a man of doubt and allows for doubt to enter into one's faith and life. And it's this big struggle of, I mean, the basic premise is, did he or didn't he molest a young African-American, the only young African-American boy in the school?
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a period piece.
And what
it's
do you think? Do you think that he did?
You know what? I never thought about the answer to that question, and I'll tell you why. Because I got so caught up in the performance, number one, of Cherry Jones, but number two, by the actress who worked so closely with her, the sister who was actually the teacher.
Well,
I have to tell
Lisa
people, if you haven't seen the show, there's only 4 actors in the entire show, yet they speak of so many other people in the cast, and you leave thinking, wow, there were like 20 people on stage, and there really are only 4.
Right.
And it's such a pressure cooker, that whole thing. But I was so wrapped up in her performance because I identified with her so much that kind of caught between two worlds or caught between two things, caught between two issues and two very, very different viewpoints. Because I'm the normalizer in the world. I like to normalize things. I like to say, okay, let's all come together and let's share each other's perspectives. So her struggle was what stuck with me, and it still even sticks with me.
Wow.
So I never got my mind to the point of thinking, did he do it or didn't he do it? Because I'm worried about, did he do it or didn't he do it? Does she think he did it? Does he think, you know? So I never tried to answer that question. So I really don't know. I think
was it all manifested in her young head because of the older?
Absolutely.
principal. Yeah.
Did she lead? Did she guide? Or did she react? I can't quite tell. And I still keep throwing that around in my mind.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. And of course, to me, the scene where I think actually the play started from writing one scene. And the scene is when the mother of the young boy comes to meet the principal. Yeah. And it's an 8-minute scene. And on Broadway, the actress, it was an actress from Memphis, Tennessee, actually won the Tony Award for supporting actress for that 8-minute scene. It's a phenomenal, gripping scene. And I don't want to tell people what it's about and what is revealed in that scene. But it's a big reason that the play turned on that scene for me and shifted my thinking into a very different way, which is what I think it's supposed to do. It's supposed to really create quite a torrent wave of possible doubt in anybody if you have a certain feeling the other way. But I thought that that scene was just riveting. I think, you know, it's interesting because Cherry talked a lot about John Patrick Shanley and where his inspiration came up for this. And, you know, he talks about the priest has these long nails. And she said he just had a priest who was one of his teachers who just had long nails and used to gross him out. So that's why I wrote that in. But one of the funny things is that John Patrick Shanley used of the kids' names when she's going through all the students, he used kids that he really went to, like, school with, parochial school with, or whatever, Catholic school with. And Cherry said she knew they were in an audience one time, and she was saying one of these names, and there was like literally an audible like kind of gasp and giggle in the house, and it was, you know, whatever the kid's real name being said.
I mean, some of the names are like Patrick O'Shanley.
Yeah.
Jack McDougal.
Yeah, but it was actually the real kid that John Shanley went to school with.
And, that's awesome.
So, you know, he was very inspired in writing this, in this play, and it is going to be made into a movie. And I can't say, but I do know who's going to be playing the part, and it's not Cherry. But, But it's you know, it's so more people will get to see it on film, hopefully, because always with theater, you know, a limited number of people get to see it. But I do encourage you to run, don't walk. And I'm so glad I had not read it. I had not read the play.
No, I was peripherally familiar only with sort of.
Yeah, I was really glad that I didn't read the play, and I didn't want to talk to Cherry too much in my interview even about the actual story, because I wanted it to be fresh and I wanted to see it. But she's just physically and vocally, and she's just stunning. She's just, it's amazing. Have you ever seen her on stage?
No, this was the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's just so different when she walks off. She's just not as large as she looks. She looks so tall, and she always has such an enormous presence on stage. Yeah. And she's not that much taller than me, which is so shocking. I really thought she was much taller. And
well, there's the whole, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff on YouTube, because of course after the show I was like, oh my God, I have to soak up everything that I can possibly find about Cherry Jones now.
Oh really?
And so I was poking around and I was looking for videos, and every time that she's her versus all these characters, it is so completely enthralling how much she changes.
She's totally riveting. I mean, that's the word I would say. She is riveting. You cannot stop watching.
No.
I had a hard time watching anybody else on stage, and I don't know if that's because I'm just totally enamored with her as an artist and as a fellow Tennessean and as a lesbian and as so many things, or if she truly just commands so much of one's focus.
She really just, and her physical mannerisms down to every, it's such a physical performance, yet her words are so compelling, and but just to watch her walk and to watch her move around. And I know it sounds like I'm gushing in the weirdest way to some people who aren't familiar with the play, but it's this whole experience. It's not singular, it's not multiple, it's just this whole experience from start to finish.
Well, and it's got a very, I mean there's this thing of homosexuality, the priesthood,
which is usually an easy subject matter to do a commentary on, and usually something very easy to poke at, because there's a lot of those stories out there.
It's not at all that. And
absolutely,
I think the fact that there's an openly lesbian actress in the main role, and I mean, I just think politically it's a very strong play for our community to go see and support. We don't really need that to go see great theater, but no,
it's so damn apropos at the moment in so many ways.
Well, it's interesting because we were talking about this too, because she's very familiar with Emily Mann, who wrote Execution of Justice. Emily actually gave Cherry her first job, and we talked about that. You know, in doing Execution of Justice at this time and in seeing Doubt at this time, you know, seeing these plays that are grappling with this clash of polar identities and those polar identities almost. And humanities can even be within a Catholic school.
Yeah.
Between a priest and a sister. You know, I mean, it can even be between those kind of people. Yeah. You know, it can be Bill O'Reilly's cultural wars between what he calls a secular, mm-hmm. you know, I guess secular humanist, is that what he calls, and the traditional warriors. So, you know, it's like it can be within that. It can be within the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. It can be within liberals, Democrats, within the straights and gays. It can be, you know, whatever. And that's a lot of what Execution of Justice is about as well.
Sure. Well, this concept of macro clashes of culture versus micro clashes of culture. And when you realize that there are so many micro clashes of culture, it sort of helps you broaden your perspective, thinking that, you know what, we all have our issues, even within our own little spheres of influence or the people that we know or things like that.
Yeah.
So it really makes you, the world just gets so much smaller.
It does, you know, and it's great because it creates such conversation and such commentary. Absolutely. And I love it. And, you know, somebody who is awesome, this is not a horrible segue at all, because this woman, I feel like, gives a commentary on the micro world,
yes.
the smallest things, from her animals to her kids to her observations on life. And also, you know, with her new book, has taken it to a kind of a very large level of these huge iconic figures. And I'm talking about comedian Paula Poundstone, mm-hmm. who's coming to Chicago and is on our show today to talk with us, just to chat with us. First time that we've had her on the Queercast, not the first time I've talked with Paula, but she's coming to Chicago for 3 shows. So another performer I encourage you to come see. She's a funny lady and definitely a beautiful observer of life. Mm. Quite funny and spot on. So we've got that today. We've got the news. We've got lots of interesting
Potter's
news.
Picks.
Jerry Potter's picks and much, much more. So stay with us.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical, and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular, I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked. Sponsored by Chase.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry, GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Your amazing skills of deception can trick a deer into thinking we're just a tree out for a walk, or a shrub having a cup of coffee.
Shrub having coffee.
Tirelessly you perfect your artistry. The squiggly black line, the blob, the slightly larger blob, all in spectacular shades of green.
Green.
Thanks to you, we look fabulous in or out of the forest with a suit that can be easily accessorized with face paint and a few twigs.
Dressed to kill.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker, because when it comes to blending in, you really stand out.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 29th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Northwestern University presents the mischievous and magical musical Pippin, written by Wicked composer Stephen Schwartz. Playing now through February 4th. For tickets to Pippin, call 847-491-7282 for more information.
About Face Theater presents Execution of Justice, Emily Mann's landmark play exploring the assassination of Harvey Milk, the trial of Dan White, and the infamous Twinkie defense. This must-see production, directed by Gary Griffin of Broadway's The Color Purple, is playing now at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln. For tickets to Execution of Justice, call 773-871-3000 or visit aboutfacetheater.com.
Northwestern University presents Tony Award-winning director Mary Zimmerman's version of Shakespeare's Cymbeline. Watch as Zimmerman makes this romantic world unfold. Cymbeline starts February 9th through the 18th. Call 847-491-7282 for more.
The Wooden Breeks is playing now at the Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks. Heidi Stillman directs Glenn Berger's masterful tale of a man tormented by the memory of his beloved and stuck in his own story. Join dreamers, schemers, and would-be lovers navigating their way through the murky Scottish town of Brood. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jerry Potter's Picks. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. I want to bring your attention to a really fun website, www.otterfashion.com. That's OTTERFASHION. That's otterfashion.com. They have a special they're running for you get 8 colorful Y-front boy briefs and a plush otter to go along with it for only $75. This is $139 retail value. The passion package comes in sizes small, medium, large, and extra large. Also, they have really fun t-shirts. They sent me some t-shirts. I wear them to the gym. They are always asked about. People want to know where I got these t-shirts, and I got that on otterfashion.com. So we want to thank those people for sending some fun stuff. I got the underwear, the clothes to sport. And go check out their website. Everyone have a great Valentine's Day. And keep listening to Jerry Potter's Picks.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
A brainstorming session and a youth collaborative recently took place concerning GLBT-related issues concerning Chicago's South Side and the 8th Ward. On the early morning hours of December 31st, 6 black males were shot at a party on the 6900 block of South Woodlawn in the 8th Ward. All were admitted to area hospitals and have been released. However, the crime, still unsolved, has set in motion a flurry of activity, including a Martin Luther King Jr. Day march down 79th Street and several meetings.
During an interview with CNN's Wolf Blitzer, Vice President Dick Cheney bristled when asked about his lesbian daughter and her recently announced pregnancy, saying that questions asking him to respond to a Focus on the Family comment were, quote, out of line. Mary Cheney and her partner of 15 years, Heather Poe, are expecting a baby in late spring.
MTVU, MTV's 24-hour college network, and the Kaiser Family Foundation have announced a competition called the Change the Course of HIV Challenge. The challenge asks gamers, activists, or students to propose a viral web-based video game concept to help raise awareness about HIV/AIDS among teens and young adults. The winner will work with MTVU and the foundation to develop the game.
Judy Shepard, the mother of slain gay student Matthew Shepard, is now an LGBT rights activist and executive director of the Matthew Shepard Foundation. She's been chosen as a finalist in the 5th annual Volvo for Life Awards contest. If selected, she will receive a Volvo and $50,000 for the foundation's youth-focused work. To vote for Judy Shepard, go to Volvo for Life Awards. Awards.com by February 4th.
Well, Anne Heche and her husband, Coley LaFoon, are separating after 5 years of marriage. Heche and Coleman LaFoon, a motion picture cameraman, were married in September 2001 after meeting while he was working on a documentary about Ellen DeGeneres, Heche's former lover. Reportedly, Heche has left LaFoon for James Tupper, her co-star on the TV show Men in Trees.
Cook Island castaway J.P. Calderon has come out. He outed himself on a recent episode of the Oxygen Network's The Janice Dickinson Modeling Agency, as he did a cover shoot for Instinct magazine, which only puts openly gay men on its cover. Of the self-described world's first supermodel, Calderon exclusively told the magazine, "We started out a little bit butting heads, but I love Janice Dickinson, and I want everyone to know she is the coolest person in the world."
Well, folks, we have the power. The buying power of the gay and lesbian demographic will probably exceed $835 billion by 2011, according to a MarketResearch.com release. This year's report reveals that the 2006 buying power of gays and lesbians was $660 billion, an amount that will increase significantly as the gay and lesbian population, estimated at 15.3 million, grows to a projected 16.3 million in 2011. And that's your Windy City Careercast News.
Thank you, parents. We hope you enjoyed the fifth graders' orchestra recital. What if wherever you went, you got more than you were expecting?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, thanks for watching the kids.
Anytime.
How were they?
Good.
No problems?
Nope. Oh, and I taught Noah his multiplication tables, and I've got Wendy reading Shakespeare.
At LaSalle Bank, we think more is precisely what you should expect. More responsiveness, more service, more convenience. In a word, more.
Hey, Billy!
Hi, Mr. Schmidt.
What are you doing in the bushes?
Oh, I was getting your newspaper.
My newspaper?
Yeah, I must have been off balance when I threw it and I totally missed the porch.
Oh.
I just didn't want you to have to go looking for it.
Thanks, Billy.
And with any luck, our philosophy will catch on everywhere. LaSalle Bank, making more possible. LaSalle Bank N.A., member FDIC.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Wicked, the most popular musical in Chicago history. For tickets, visit wickedthemusical.com/Chicago.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
On stage, a stool, a microphone, and a can of Diet Pepsi are the only tools that comic Paula Poundstone needs to deliver a spontaneous and often off-kilter performance. She's received numerous awards for her comic stylings, but comedy isn't her only shtick. She's produced an award-winning children's audiobook project, as well as the series, Math with a Laugh, for students in grades 4 through 7. Fresh off the launch of her new book, There Is Nothing in This Book I Meant to Say, she'll be here February 15th through the 17th in the Chicagoland area, bringing you her own brand of comedy.
Hey, Miss Paula, how are you?
Oh, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
We are good. Peter
cold.
And I are we're a little cold, but we're excited to be with you. It always makes our day better.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, the show Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes.
The NPR news quiz show weekly, that tapes in Chicago, and I'm always so pleased to see the live audience that comes out, and I particularly appreciate it knowing that there's only about two nice days in Chicago each year, so they've obviously weathered something to be there, you know, either like just unbelievable humidity, sweaty hot, or that really nice freezing cold thing that y'all have going on there.
Yeah, well, you've actually watched possibly some of the football that's been going on. Those people are crazy. They'll sit outside in anything.
Absolutely.
I don't watch football, but I've heard about it.
Yeah.
It just seems so silly to me.
Well,
see, push one another down.
Exactly.
I know, right? And I think there's a shuttlecock and some sort of badminton kind of thing in there. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. Oh, is that true? In the in the football, I just feel like the fans themselves are off-putting. Even if I played the game, I wouldn't want to be in the room with all those fans.
Yeah. No, do your makeup right. Don't just, you know, more than two colors, honey. That's what I need.
That's right. We'll all be celebrating Peter's 30th birthday, actually, on Super Bowl Sunday. Those of us
I'm going to celebrate.
There you go.
Awesome. So yeah, when you come to Chicago, are there favorite things that you like to do? Because obviously everybody, you know,
eat
really loves the Wait, Wait series.
It's a really fun show, actually. I have a beautiful tradition when I go to Chicago. I go to the White Hen Pantry and get Fig Newtons.
I know which White Hen you're going to as well.
there's so many hens out there. You can there's about 10 white hens between my hotel and the show. And I go in and I get some Fig Newtons and I bring them to share with people on the show, all of whom say that they never eat Fig Newtons except for when I'm there.
Yeah.
And nor do I.
Yeah.
It's like a Seder or something. It's not just going to crack out in the middle of the year, you know, but, you know, when it's the appropriate time.
Wow, Fig Newtons in Chicago.
Do you ever go crazy and get like the strawberry Newtons or one of the other kind of Newton or just the fig?
No, those are sacrilege.
There you go. Good girl.
My son was talking to me with such disdain this morning about the fact that a kid in his class had like this kind of newfangled kind of Pop-Tart. And he said it almost with a shudder of fear. He said, Mom, don't ever get those. You know, and I said, I agree, honey. You know, there's some things that they just should not tamper with.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm thinking of letting him switch schools as a result. So, I feel that that's such a breach. You know, it's one thing for there to be a lot of name calling and rolling him around the rug. Sure, that's a problem on a daily basis at school. But when the kids are bringing in some kind of newfangled Pop-Tart, no, then we got to hightail it out of there.
With oats, honey, and extra fiber, I don't think so. That's not what I want.
Not right.
How do you access children with comedy differently than adults?
I'm not sure. I don't know. It's funny because when I did write this little series of math books, for example, with my their math workbooks that I wrote with my high school math teacher.
Hmm.
And the truth is, I haven't really tried it out on kids. We had a publisher. We made a deal. Well, not those specific stories anyways. The way that the idea was kind of generated was when my kids were struggling with math, I'm not in any way a whiz, but I'm competent with a textbook, you know.
And still friendly with your high school math teacher, which is something I don't know many people are.
I'm actually, my second grade teacher corresponds with me. Somebody last night in the audience, I was in San Francisco last night, somebody shouted out that they knew the woman who tutored me in handwriting when I was in the fourth grade.
Wait, that's a long shout out, isn't it? Right. I know the person who tutored you in cursive writing in the third grade.
She actually said Mrs. Amidon. And of course, I remember Mrs. Amidon. And quite honestly, the idea of being tutored in handwriting is such highway robbery, I can hardly even believe it.
Oh.
But the truth is, and I didn't want to say this because they were friends with Mrs. I said to them, I go, well, how close are you to her?
Oh.
We're very close, and I said, well, then I won't tell you.
Oh, no.
But, the truth is, Mrs. Amidon was pregnant, I think, and had to, she took a leave from school, you know, to have this baby. And then when the money wasn't rolling in, the teacher that I had decided that I desperately needed tutored in handwriting.
Huh.
So it's a little...
I'll scratch your back.
It was, what's that word? Like, corruption.
Yes.
Because now they don't care. How kids, handwriting isn't even, nobody cares.
Because everybody's got a computer.
Well, I guess because people think that when the world's blown up, the computers are still going to work. Yeah. I have a feeling what we really should be learning to do is paint on the side of a cave.
Yeah.
We really need to improve our hieroglyphics.
Yeah, leave a mark somewhere. So
But there was a point to all this, which is, so if my children were struggling with math, what I would do is I would take the problems that they were working on, and in my effort to explain them, I would always end up doing them. And so then I'd say, well, okay, let me write you some new ones, because I need you to know how to do this. So I'd write them new ones, and when I did so, I would often fit them into little stories that were personalized to my kids.
Uh-huh. Mm.
You know, one of my classics is, because Tosha is my oldest daughter, I'd say, if Tosha sits in a chair pretending to do math for 2 hours, 7 days a week, how much time is that wasted?
Hmm.
And then the follow-up question would be, is that okay to do?
Yeah.
I'd usually make them really silly. And so I had told this to my math teacher, and that the kids got to the place where they would come to me and ask me to write them problems because they thought the problems were funny.
Right.
And so I told this to my math teacher. She said, we should try to make a book of that. So we did this project where there were three workbooks, and I wrote goofy little stories, but I never really child tested them. So for all I know, I mean, I think they're funny, but, you know, I really am not sure. I was just sort of trusting the judgment of the publisher who worked in the field of publishing, you know, books that were for, you know, textbooks for kids.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping I didn't miss the mark, but...
Well, I can't imagine, because you usually hit the mark pretty well. And with your new book, There's Nothing in This Book That I Meant to Say, which came out in November, what was kind of the inspiration on writing that book for you? How did it come about?
Well, I made a deal. The publisher, Crown, came to me nine years ago now, I think, about writing a book. And I had, you know, certainly thought of that notion for a while. I've done, like, writing articles and the like, but never anything big.
Right.
And I really, you know, I think the first mandate was that it should be a funny book, and I think the second sort of expectation was that it would be sort of memoir-ish, as my act is kind of memoir-ish. My act is, reflections of, talking about me. It's in the main autobiographical, and then the things that I, just sort of the things that go through my head, there's no, you know, I don't do a character and I'm not, I don't have a theme. But anyways, when I went to write it, and I knew I didn't want to just write my act. I knew that that was not of interest to me. Some people do that and do it very well, but it just didn't strike me as all that much fun. So when I went to write it, I really did that thing that people talk about at the Academy Awards when they give away the writing award, where I sat in front of blank paper for a really long time, feeling kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I felt like a big geek writing about me. So, you know, I'm not dead and I haven't really done anything yet. It just seems silly, a little bit presumptuous. But then it occurred to me, I firmly believe it's a manifestation of obsessive compulsive disorder, but I have this thing that happens to me, which is no matter who's talking to me and no matter what they're talking about, I inadvertently railroad the conversation back to something about myself. Usually it reminds me, everything anybody says reminds me of something that happened to me once, and I cut them off, I'm off and running again. It happens all the time. So as I sat in front of the blank piece of paper, I realized, although I felt dumb just plain writing about myself, if I tried to write about Abraham Lincoln, I would not be able to shut up about myself.
Right.
And so that's what I did. I started off, my test chapter, the first one I did, was about Abe Lincoln.
Yes.
Just everything I said about the guy, indeed, reminded me of something about myself. For example, of course I've never emancipated slaves, but when I have a babysitter, I try to come home early. So there were just lots and lots of parallels, if you will. Mm. So the book is a series of biographies of towering historic figures. And in the telling of their story, I tell my own. When a person puts it down, hopefully it's funny, but when a person puts it down, they will have read authentic, albeit brief, biographies of each character. Charles Dickens, Joan of Arc, Helen Keller, Beethoven.
Anybody that got left on the cutting room floor?
No, I ended up going, well, one. I had started to do Sojourner Truth at one point. And what was really interesting about that, I mean, I love biography even before I began doing this task, and mm-hmm. I love history even though I'm not particularly well-read or well-versed in it. Each time I hear a little snippet, I enjoy it. Mm. But I read this book about Sojourner Truth, and the only thing I knew of her was I had heard reference to the Ain't I a Woman speech. Now, she was a suffragette and a freed slave long, long time ago, and she would speak at, like, you know, kind of Chautauqua kind of things,
right.
And was kind of renowned for this. And so I had heard of this one speech where she has this refrain, a frequent refrain, where she says, you know, and ain't I a woman? And I can't remember the rest of the speech, but I remember it was very moving and it was very memorable, except for that I don't remember. And this biographer insists it never took place.
Oh, no.
She, in fact, what she went on to say, and she had this very academic way of sort of giving proof of whatever she was saying. What she went on to say was pretty much everything we know about Sojourner Truth is not true.
Wow.
Or everything we thought we know. And she explained why, and it sounded reasonable what she was saying. But the truth is, I enjoy the mythological story a lot better. Mm. So it really got me thinking about the way information about people is presented and how there's a certain amount of lore about people. And, you know, if somebody wrote a biography of, if say Abraham Lincoln were alive now, and someone wrote a book about him, it would be some sort of tell-all weird thing.
Right.
You know, it would turn out he had cheated on Mary. You know what I mean?
And he slept with the guy in the bed, and he was the big homo, and there would be all kinds of stuff.
Exactly.
It would His beard was fake. It was drawn in. You know.
Precisely. It would turn out that he somehow regretted emancipating the slaves. So you know, there would just be some, they would find some way of making something sort of ugly out of it. And so it made me start thinking a lot about, okay, is it better to have a story presented of someone that has these kind of bigger-than-life characteristics that are really, really good and give us something to shoot for?
Right.
Or does that just make us feel bad about ourselves?
It's a good question.
You know, would it be better to know, you know, the foibles of everybody.
The humanity of everybody, right. as opposed to deifying. Because we like to deify our people nowadays. We like to deify them and then watch them fall to the ground.
And then step on them really hard.
And
then loot them.
And so I want to ask you to kind of do one or two of these live. So if I asked you to, give us your thoughts on Hillary Clinton.
You know, I really like Hillary Clinton. In fact, I really don't know which Democrat I'm supporting at this point, which I guess sounds a little bit silly because I know there's a variety of views on Iraq among the handful that I know that I like. But I have always really liked her. I am a big admirer of hers. I think it would be great to have a woman president. I think if the world were led by women, not that we all think the same by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that if the world were led by women, we wouldn't have the majority of the problems that we have, because I do think a lot of them are somehow testosterone related.
Yeah.
Just because I have a son. You know, he just thinks of things. I remember one day telling him, you know, sort of a poignant little story about my second grade teacher thinking I had done something I hadn't done. And her solution was to drag me out of the room by my hair. But this was a long time ago when people did stuff like that.
Right. And it was acceptable expected.
Yeah, it was expected.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, it kind of was in an odd way, you know. My biggest fear was that my mother would find out that somebody thought I did something that this was a good solution for.
Mm. Right.
Thomas, his response was, "I'd like to kill her."
Ooh.
And I thought, gee, honey. I didn't even think of that one. I was being dragged out by my hair. Where do you get these ideas? I just think it's a real... I'm not saying that every male thinks that way. You know, like, I think probably E.B. White doesn't. But E.B. White may be just screwing up the curve and making us unable to deal with the male species as a result.
This is true.
But there was a point to this. I forget what it was. Oh, I really like Hillary Clinton. Having said
that... See, there you go.
I will say, I saw her on this Nightline interview about, maybe it was 4 or 5 months ago now. Maybe it was even 6 months ago now. I saw her in this Nightline interview. They followed, it was, you know, pre-senatorial election. They followed her on the campaign trail a little bit, and then they had sort of interstitially this sit-down interview with her. And at the end of the whole thing, they had cut up the sit-down interview in different parts. But at the end of the whole thing, they go back to the sit-down interview, and the lady says to her, "Okay, so here's the big question. Well, it's, you know, are you going to run for president?" And she said, "I haven't thought about it." I thought, you know,
that's a lie.
I have thought about her running for president, and she hasn't.
Wow.
Now, maybe it was just particularly poorly chosen words in the moment. Maybe she meant, "I haven't made that determination," but it sure isn't what she said. And I just thought, well, what is this, a joke? Well, are we just saying, like, the biggest, silliest lie we can think of and then, you know, see the look on the interviewer's face? I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, look it. You know, I have a 16-year-old. I'm used to a fair amount of dishonesty.
Yeah, if that's denial, it's pretty thick denial.
Yeah, it
may turn out, you know, because I'm having this really silly problem now with my daughter going to school and changing clothes.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
I don't really care what she wears. It's not that I really care, but I do feel like, shouldn't you be in class?
Yeah.
Didn't you have something else you're supposed to be doing at that time? But it is kind of like a silly, you know, it's just like a little deceitful kind of, you know, it's like a high school-y thing to do. She's in the 90s. It's a high school-y thing to do. But I'll tell you something. If it turns out that Hillary Clinton is coming out of the Senate chamber and then changing into a different kind of sleazy outfit, I don't think she's the one for us.
We need the lipstick cam somewhere planted so we can find out what she's changing into behind the scenes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, there's been no problem with grafts, but she has been surreptitiously changing clothes in the bathroom.
That's right.
Hey, I don't have those tights.
And earrings.
She's been bringing like a really lurid color of tights.
Why is she always carrying such large purses? I can't tell.
Oh my God.
Years ago, I was watching, I had this assignment one time when I wrote for Mother Jones Magazine.
I remember when you were writing for them regularly. Mm-hmm. I used to always read your poem.
It was fun mostly. But one of my assignments one time, because I said to them when I first took the job, I go, look it, I love to write. but I just am not particularly creative. You have to tell me what you want me to write about, and then I'll go to town.
Yeah.
But I can't come up with the ideas. I said, I've had two ideas in my entire life, and one of them was to write a film about a girl who gets hit by a tornado, and a window hits her in her head, and she wakes up, and so it was already taken. And the other one was just not a good idea. So I said, you have to give me, you know, sort of marching orders, and I'll go from there. So they did that. They would call me up and say, well, here's what we were thinking, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here's what you're thinking. You know, sort of just give me a little assignment. So they called me one time, and they said, okay, you have to watch 20 hours of C-SPAN.
Wow.
And write
oh, my
about
God.
It. Well, so I happen to love C-SPAN. So it wasn't, it didn't strike me as awful at first. And what the way I did it, I didn't watch it in a row because that's just impossible in my life. But we videotaped 20 hours concurrently of
wow.
C-SPAN.
Wow.
And I took the tapes with me on the road and at home, and I had them on, you know, so it took a few days to get through it. And but therefore, I really kind of watched closely the way that, you know, there's a lot of times where the Senate's voting and from a, you know, the camera's just sort of on the Senate floor and people are just wandering around. You know, there's nothing really happening.
Right. It's very aimless looking.
Yeah. Picking their noses, scratching.
Yeah, exactly. And they're sort of standing around, right, jingling the change in their pocket.
Yeah.
And, you know.
These are my legislators. Great.
So I happen to have the opportunity to notice that when they call the, you know, vote and each person goes up, Barbara Boxer always brings her purse.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, okay.
Like the queen or something.
Well, how untrustworthy can this body of people be?
She should be able to just leave it there.
She's been a senator for a pretty long time. It's not like she's naive.
She has the same mother that I have. I guarantee you. My mother is suspicious from the word spish. I mean, she is just, you know, always take that purse with you, clamp down. You know, the queen. The queen, Barbara Boxer, and me.
I wonder
what I didn't know the queen always carried a purse, does she?
Oh, the queen always carries that purse, that little hard handbag, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like over her forearm.
Yeah.
She always has a purse with her.
And you know she's got like mints, a revolver, and some sort of dental
that's that
floss.
Famous, that's that famous old Mud Will Be Flung Tonight Bette Midler whole sketch about
right.
what the fuck does she have in her,
right,
purse?
What's in her purse?
She's the queen, you know? What does she have? Like a card that says, I am the queen. I mean, like, what could she have in it?
She has a scepter and a crown.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Is her ID. That's a very good point.
It's true. It's totally true. Well, you know, folks are going to be able to see you. You're coming to the Chicagoland area. You're actually going to be in three different locations, which is really fun. I kind of get to mix it up and go into different parts of the Chicago area. You're going to be at the Rao Center of the Arts, which is in Crystal Lake. You're going to be at the MAC at the College of DuPage, which
Glen Ellen
does so much in Glen Ellen, and also at Center East Theater in Skokie. So all these are coming up Thursday, February 15th through Saturday, February 17th. And all of that information, I mean, you can check out all about Paula at her website, paulapoundstone.com. We will have all of these locations and where
dates
you can buy tickets.
And times and stuff
on our site, so you can go right
Absolutely.
Through. And the book you can get everywhere. There is
everywhere
you want to be. There is nothing in this book that I meant to say. We should just transcribe what you just did. You just did a whole other chapter there on Hillary.
I know, right? That's the forward.
We could sit here and talk about Barack Obama and probably get, you know, two or three chapters on him. I would say.
My phone is so screwed up. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Every phone in my house has some sort of wire problem because I have all these cats and they chew things. And
you still have cats. Still a lover of cats. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
you have
11
cats. The first time I ever remember seeing you was the time when, this was years ago, so dating us both. But I remember when you did the sketch about the cat and the spray bottle. I think the first time you ever did it and you sprayed the cat in the back of the head and the cat's like, or cat watching you in the shower going, how do you do that? Like all that. And that just used to make me, I mean, when I first saw you, I just remember laughing so hard about all your cat stories.
Well, thank you very much. Part of the reason I have these cats, because Lord knows it's not for pleasure at this point, they've written most of my act.
Yeah.
And then I have a small black and white cat that I employ as my assistant.
Oh, well, there you excellent. Go. Do you have naked cats? Peter has two naked pussies.
I have two hairless cats.
Hairless
oh,
cats.
No, we don't know. We don't have that.
Oh,
you know, I'll tell you something. I was at a cat show one time, and I toyed with the notion of getting a Cornish Rex at one point, which is one of the really weird looking ones.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're so sweet though.
Well, yeah, it was very charming, the one that I saw. Although, you know, I mean, my house is already filled with charm. Right now I'm staring directly at my lizard who's scratching at the glass in his tank and puffing out his beard because he sees his reflection and he's attracted to himself.
Funny, that sounds like my morning.
Paula Poundstone has a gay lizard. I love it.
You
a narcissistic
gay lizard.
I
look at myself in the mirror and believe me, attraction is not the word that I
You don't puff out your beard when you're watching.
Yeah, no, I don't. Well, my beard puffs out all by itself. And I did, of course, develop jowls just about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Well, I love that. You should go to our website and you can check out. Are your cats on our website?
I think I might have to put them.
You may have to put them on the WindyCityQueerCast.com.
You should
site.
Just come by when you're in Shy. You can say, hey, I want to see a naked cat. Bring
there
it on.
There you go. There you
oh,
go.
I'd love
you
to
can
do that.
Incorporate
it.
Where are the litter boxes? This is what I want to know. How many do you have 11 cats? You have probably a very big house, lots of children.
We have two litter boxes for 11 cats, but a regimen of almost constant sifting. A lot of people think that have Parkinson's. But I sift so frequently that I almost never stop.
You've got to get the automagic ones. Have you never tried the automatic ones? They're nice.
We have, and it was just too much work for it. The thing broke down. No, I'm telling you, it was overwhelming for it.
Plus, it screwed up her Parkinson's.
Warning.
It's a lot of cats. But what we're doing is the thing they used to do in the gas stations years ago where they have to put in a dime. So there's like two of them that sometimes I've caught crawling under, but mostly they pay the money. And so it's a little side cottage industry for me.
It's good. You know, you got to get it where you can, Paula. You got to get it where you can. Well, everybody, please don't miss it. If you have not seen Paula live, it is truly a delightful evening. And you'll have three options in the Chicago area: Thursday, February 15th through the 17th at the Rouse Center of the Arts in Crystal Lake, the MAC at the College of DuPage in Glen Ellen, or the Center East Theater in Skokie. Paula, thank you so much for being on with us.
You.
And we hope you have a great day without us.
Thanks a lot, you guys. It was fun.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.